This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang. Thank you so much for joining us. We're here every week, and we talk about subjects that we think are important and topical and current and educational for all of us who live here in the Western New York community. And we want to be right on target by telling you that Talk Saves Lives, and that this month is Suicide Prevention Month. So we wanted to have an opportunity to not only bring this to your attention and talk about it a little bit, but introduce you to a very well-known expert in the field who's going to give us some, I think, valuable information. I had the opportunity to meet our guest, Dr. Cecilia Spacone, recently in court, because we had a very interesting lecture, an introduction to suicide prevention in a talk during, you know, one of the talk sessions that we have for the judges and people in the court system. And it was about, you know, really not only just suicide, the impact of it, but most importantly, how at all it can be prevented, and also how prevalent and important a subject it is here. And Dr. Cecilia Spacone, actually, to tell you a little bit about her, was the executive director of the Buffalo Psychiatric Center for many, many years, and has a background and was awarded the 2017 New York State Suicide Prevention Award for her accomplishments in making suicide a never event at the Buffalo Psychiatric Center. So we are really honored that you could take some time to talk to us about this important subject, Doctor. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to start out by asking you, why suicide became or is such an important topic, and why there's a whole month, you know, dedicated to suicide prevention. What's the reasoning behind it?
Well, the issue with suicide is that we like to look at it as a health issue, a complicated health issue, but a health issue. Yet we can't really deal with it because there's so much stigma around it still. I think it's getting a little bit better. There's stigma about someone saying, I am thinking about suicide. There's stigma in families who have lost someone to suicide, and that prevents us from getting that help out to them. So I think the idea for September being Suicide Prevention Month is to try to reduce some of that stigma, to talk about it more, to let people get the help that they need and not feel that there's something wrong with them or they're bad because they are thinking about suicide. Because we can't help them unless they tell us that they're having those thoughts.
Right. Well, what I think the stigma involves, among other things, is the idea that if a loved one or your child or a spouse or somebody that you are very close to does, you know, succeed in committing suicide, you always feel other person, what did I do wrong? Mm-hmm. Why didn't I know? Why didn't I help? Mm-hmm. Why didn't I see the signs? And that probably, you know, comes along with the idea of there's a stigma.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's, for survivors of someone who has lost a person they love by suicide, there's guilt. And that's very hard to deal with. And yet we know that in many cases, the person is not trying to hurt their family or do anything against their loved ones, but they're trying to escape what they see as pain that that will not end, either physical pain or psychological pain or sometimes both. And it's very hard. We believe suicide is preventable, but I would never say that every single suicide can be prevented. Yet we know that And that's the whole idea about the awareness in September, is to get the word out as to what are the warning signs. Sometimes they're very subtle, hard to see. They're hard for mental health professionals to see sometimes. So a family member who misses something, it's understandable. But the more we can get this information out, the better we have a chance of saving people. And the big message is there is hope. People don't have to use this method to escape their pain.
Now, I have, thanks to you, a leaflet or a page in my hand, and it says, "There is hope. Together we can save lives." And it says, "Suicide warning signs." So I wanted to ask you to go over these suicide warning signs. I'm sure it doesn't apply, across the board, as you said, to every single person, but a lot of them are kind of universal.
There are things to, I look at it this way. There are risk factors that we'll carry around for any particular illness or disorder. And, you just want to be aware. But then when you're having certain symptoms, you say, oh, I need to reach out. I need to get medical assistance or help. For example, cardiac. You could walk around with high cholesterol for a long time. But if you're starting to be, you're sweating, you have chest pain, that's the time to act. And these warning signs are the time to act for people. So some of the things that we see is a person saying, I can't take it anymore, or thoughts, I could just kill myself. We sometimes, they might even say them jokingly. And I say, don't ignore those words. They're important words. I can't take it anymore, or they'd be better off without me. Because then the person's in the position of feeling like they're almost doing something to help their family by taking their life. Anyone who seems to be acquiring or seeking methods to kill themselves, someone who's never owned a firearm, just goes out and buys whatever they can find without really making a thoughtful purchase for any particular obvious reason, or saving drugs or poisons, like keeping a stockpile of one's medications. Someone who says that, I don't have any purpose in life, I feel trapped, it's not going to get better. People who talk about, who maybe give away, this is the one that, you often hear about in the media, giving away your important possessions. And I heard a woman speak once, and she said that her niece had a shoe collection that she just loved. And she posted it on Facebook, and she had several hundred pairs of shoes, and said, "Anyone who wants any of my shoes, come on over and get them." And the aunt said, "Something's wrong." She jumped in her car and went over to her niece's house, and she was actually in process of getting ready to take her life. So, that was somebody who knew someone and saw that as a warning sign and saved her life. Now, in terms of mood, we often talk about depression and feeling sad and down, and that is one sign. Yet sometimes the mood might be more irritable or angry. You can have what we call an agitated depression. So it's not always just sadness and down. It can also manifest as being more irritable and easily upset. I think in terms of mood, what you want to look for is a sharp change in that person's mood from their normal way of acting and reacting. And I even saw once where someone was always seemed to be angry and upset, and then one day they seemed very happy, just suddenly out of the blue and calm. And that actually precipitated a suicide attempt. So it is hard. I'm not saying it's an easy thing, but looking for an immediate change or a sudden change in mood, particularly if it goes to anger, anxiety, or depression. People who are in states of stress that are ongoing or have lack of connection, they talk about loneliness, they drop out of activities, daily activities that they'd enjoyed. Someone maybe always went to the bowl with the league on Monday nights, and all of a sudden they drop out for no apparent reason. That can be a warning sign. People who talk about guilt or shame, and sometimes with a humiliation that a person experiences that is public. And, of course, with social media now, everything is public. So I always say when I was in high school, if my boyfriend broke up with me, I would know and maybe two of my best girlfriends. But now it's the whole school knows within minutes. So, something like a DWI, something where a person feels that public humiliation, the important thing is that that person gets support and help during that time period.
And then I know that when you say there's a difference between depression and, you know, suicidal thoughts, they're very close. It's very hard when people are depressed, like, you know, you said, disinterested in life.
Yes.
And especially disinterested in life areas that are important. In other words, not just what they did before, but like main things, like their career or their job or their family, I guess, mm-hmm. something like that. And that might be a sign, not just depression, but another sign of, you know, thoughts of suicide.
Yes, a lack of someone who drops out of things, someone who was a great worker, you know, and all of a sudden is coming in late or, you know, not taking on tasks at work, you know, calling in sick all the time and they're not really sick. That anyone can, you know, obviously see. So looking for that kind of change or dropping out. I mean, during the pandemic, there was a, you know, people got together on Zoom, and there was a group I heard that, you know, got together and they supported each other every week, and then one woman just stopped attending. And it was good that one of the other attendees called her and said, "Is everything okay?" And in fact, everything was okay. So the worst that can happen I'll talk a little bit about reaching out, is they say, "No, I'm fine, you know, you're overreacting." That's okay, you know.
It would be better than not, right?
I always say, assume you're the only one who's going to reach out to that person.
That's right. And it would be better if you are overreacting than if you're ignoring it.
Right.
So obviously. I know during COVID, I think one of the reasons we're even talking about this is because a lot of people either did actually commit suicide or think about it during that isolation, during that 2 years when life was so disrupted and your, you know, associations with other people were disrupted, your job, your careers, everything, school.
Mm-hmm. Everything. It affected all aspects of our life. The interesting thing about that is that we worried about a huge jump in the rate of suicide. And people were talking about it'll be another epidemic of suicide. In fact, nationally, the suicide rate during COVID went down a couple of percentage points. I know, everyone's surprised. We were all surprised to hear that. In Erie County, we had an even more dramatic drop. The first year of the pandemic, 2020, it went down about 9%, and then the second year, close to 25% drop. And we were like, how did this happen? Now, across the board, people are expressing increased mental health concerns from the pandemic and during the pandemic. They're saying they're more depressed, they're more anxious, they're expressing, you know, days of having a dysphoric mood. But the suicide rate didn't go up. And a couple of things could be, and I don't have the answer, but we're speculating. One is that during times of national disaster, if you go back to 9/11, the suicide rate actually went down a little bit after that. People kind of bond together, they reach out a little more, and there's a sort of a pulling together in the community. Those are all things that prevent suicide. The other thing is that the mental health community, I saw this locally, and I know it happened nationally, they just stepped up to the plate and really worked hard to help people, to support people, to get treatment to people. It was stigma, I think, went down a little bit because everybody was upset. Everybody was having mental health issues. So it didn't seem so bad to say, I have them and I need some help. And I think the extensive use of telehealth may have helped too, because that can be done in the privacy of your home, as opposed to having to go into, you know, what people would say, oh, I have to go see a shrink, and go into a shrink's office, and they feel embarrassed to be seen walking in to a mental health clinic. And this could be done, and we know that men are particularly victims of the stigma and die by suicide. 3/4 of the suicides in New York are men. And so this might have been a way for more people who were worried about stigma to get some help privately. Those are my speculations. We don't really know for sure.
That's an interesting statistic, because one of the reasons that we in the court were talking about suicide, or it came to our attention because one of our colleagues, you know, did commit suicide, and it brought to the attention of so many of us, you know, that if only we had done this, if only we had done that, you know, if only we had recognized it, this kind of thing. And that's what happens, I'm sure. If you just tuned in, you are listening to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang. And today we are talking to Dr. Celia Spacone, who was the executive director of the Buffalo Psychiatric Center. And also, I should have said, I guess, what you're doing now and many other things that we're going to talk about, how since retiring, she was appointed the coordinator of the Suicide Prevention Coalition of Erie County. And so the coalition was actually recently awarded the Mental Health Advocates of Western New York 2022 Advocacy Award. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And they're doing such a great job. I wanted to talk about the other giveaway, which I thought was very interesting. It's Talk Saves Lives, but one of the, you know, inside information is some people are more at risk for suicide mm-hmm. than others. Mm-hmm. And I think that is important for us to point out what the risk factors are that might lead you to. And I have to start with the very last. I know I want you to go into all of them, but I always thought, and I don't know if this turned out to be true, but it is, according to you, one of the factors, that there is a, when you say historical factor, mm-hmm. I've known so many people who had a family history of suicide, and then they committed suicide. So I think that what you're calling historical factor is very, very crucial element.
Yes, having had in the historical factors that put someone at increased risk, and again, we have to take these cautiously. The risk is increased a little bit. It still doesn't mean that that's what's going to happen to that person. It just it would be, you know, similar to a physical issue where you know, maybe have a family history of heart disease or diabetes. So you just take a little extra care with yourself. But having a family history of suicide does increase one's risk. And, of course, it depends, you know, a parent more, you know, than a distant relative. Having observed domestic violence in the home increases one's risk. Childhood abuse, neglect. Having had a previous suicide attempt increases one's risk. And there's something kind of, that one's a little complicated. So, and this is the hope part. Someone who has attempted suicide once has an increased risk, but we know that people who survive that attempt, 90% of them will go on not to die by suicide. So that's a wonderful, hopeful thing. If we can save someone from that first attempt, we know that odds are they will not go on to die by suicide. Yet, even 10% is higher than the general population. So it is an increased risk, but it's certainly not a one-to-one kind of a correlation.
And talk a little bit about the other two factors.
Mm-hmm. So the biggest factor is having a mental health condition. Again, not everyone who has a mental health condition will complete suicide or die by suicide. We usually like to say die by suicide simply rather than complete or committed, and I fall into it myself sometimes. Having had a mental health condition increases one's risk. Depression, is the most likely, just because it's most commonly occurring. That breaks my heart because it's probably the most treatable mental health condition. So we say, you know, if you're feeling depressed, you're having a thought of suicide, that's not right. You need to get some help. Substance use disorders, particularly overuse of alcohol, because alcohol is a depressant. So someone gets depressed and they might be drinking to get out of their depression, and they're making themselves more depressed. It also is disinhibiting. So someone would do something, perhaps impulsively, under the influence of alcohol. The actual mental health condition, though, that has the highest rate is bipolar disorder, except bipolar doesn't occur as frequently in the population. So the raw numbers aren't as high. It's higher for depression. But any other types of mental health conditions or a traumatic brain injury, we're learning about that as a risk factor. And having a serious or chronic health condition, particularly if it involves pain and trouble sleep disturbance.
I think we see that most often in what we're reading about now, like assisted suicide, for example, where the person is just has a disease or cancer or something wrong that is not curable.
Mm-hmm.
I can't obviously name them all, and I'm not a doctor, but the point is that you just feel, I would like to end it because I'm in pain, or it's not going to go away, or I'm not going to get better, that kind of thing.
Right.
So that's probably very common. But also you mentioned, and I think that's interesting, environmental factors.
Ah.
That is very important, especially in this day and age.
Thank you. That's a great question. So this is where we're finding the ability to have a public health impact. So it could be prolonged stress, or including bullying, life events, having seen someone you know die by suicide, or sensationalized media accounts. But the one we are working on now that we do have an ability to impact is access to lethal means. For about half of the people, that final decision can be made very quickly. They might be unhappy for a while, but they make that final decision. Some of the research is showing half of the people have a 10-minute span between making the decision and actually acting on it. So what we encourage is to have your environment, your home, be suicide safer. You know, if there is a firearm in the home, keep it locked. During times of family crisis or say going through a divorce, or you know, a youth who's in, you know, running into trouble and having a hard time, get the firearm out of the homes. Keep it with a friend. If you go to our website, suicidepreventionecny.org, we have a map showing all the locations in Erie and Niagara County of gun shops and firing ranges, and law enforcement who will accept voluntary temporary storage of a firearm. Like most of them, no questions asked. Just get it out of the house during that critical period. Make sure you don't have a stockpile of old medications.
I was just going to say, let's not forget the drugs.
Right. Let's not forget those. And many people, you know, they particularly, so if someone's dealing with chronic pain, you know, they might have lots of scripts, and it's important to get them out. If someone's in a real crisis, you know, keep them locked and have just someone take out their daily dose once a day and put it out there. So then we'd encourage people to get their medications into blister packs, too, because by the time, I know it takes me about 2 minutes to pop out one pill.
I had to get a lesson when I had them in how to push that little pill through the, I don't know, I was doing it from the wrong side, and my friend said, no, you know, I mean, this was when I was ill and had some kind of a medication prescription.
Right,
and they,
right.
And a lot of them, that over-the-counter drugs come like that.
That's safer.
So you're right.
Even the over-the-counter drugs, don't go to, Sam's Club and buy, 2,000 ibuprofen, and have them in your, I know it's a little bit of a cost savings, but it's not safe. And you don't want to have large amounts of pills around the house. You want someone to have to think and and actually work at making that attempt if they're in crisis.
And you mentioned this before, what it's under the environmental factors, but I think it's a factor that comes into play everywhere, and it's the harassment, the bullying, the relationship problems, what you're calling prolonged stress that people are facing.
Yeah.
No matter what age.
Right. Right. It can happen to adults as well as youth. And we know youth have a particular vulnerability. Young people ages 10 to 24, it's the second leading cause of death, is suicide.
So we mentioned at the very beginning that our subject is talk saves lives. And I guess we want to reiterate and reconfirm and stress that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So when you know somebody may be at risk, but you see those warning signs, important thing is to talk to that person. Get them in a private location, not isolated. You don't want to, go on a hiking trip in the middle of nowhere and start the conversation. But to have sort of a private conversation and say, listen, I've noticed whatever you've noticed in that person. And sometimes when people are experiencing these things or feeling these things or acting this way, they're thinking about taking their life. Is that what's going on for you? Some form of conversation like that, where you just openly have the conversation. And then people don't want to do it because they say, well, what if they say yes? What do I say? And I'm going to give you something to say. Just say, I'm sorry you're going through that. I want to help. And then listen to the person. Listening to somebody in crisis actually reduces their stress. And if they seem imminently suicidal, you don't want to leave them alone, and you want to reach out and get some help, and I'll be, sharing some resources to do that before the end of the program.
Right. Now we come to that part
Okay. Where
I want to tell, I want you to help me to tell all of our listeners,
sure,
if they're in crisis and they live in Erie County, these are the places that you can call.
So you can call Crisis Services, which is 716-834-3131, and that is a 24-hour suicide prevention hotline. So during the pandemic, they did not close down once. Let me say that again, 716-834-3131. If you don't live in Erie County, you can call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. That number in Erie County gets routed back to Crisis Services, so it's better to use 834-3131 and just get to them directly. And the national one just went to the 988 this summer. So nationally, you can call 988 and get routed to the crisis prevention service in your community. And veterans can use that as well. And then they just press 1 to get a veteran-specific line. But the Crisis Services has mobile outreach. They can actually go out and evaluate someone on site if needed. They can involve the police if needed, if something is in process. But you can also call them and just talk. As the person in trouble, you can talk, or as a loved one, and say, listen, my friend just said this to me, and I'm worried, and what should I do? So you can have that kind of a conversation. I should also mention, for children, there's under 18, there is Spectrum Human Services Cares, and their number is 716-882-4357. So there's lots of resources. It's important to...
Yes.
To take
and
advantage.
I want to say, even though we're pointing out that this particular month is suicide prevention, any time we're going to replay this many times so that it applies no matter what month it is, mm-hmm, we want people to have this information. So thank you so much, Dr. Spicone. Thanks for listening. We hope you've learned something and we've helped you with this conversation on Target. Join us again next week, same time, same station. Bye now.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.